Welcome to Super Tathis for Parshas Va'eschonon. Tons to say here, starting with, I have six stories. The first one is about Rav Nissim Karelitz during the time of the Bein HaMitzarim. He was involved with a potential ger, and this ger's candidate was just trying to time the actual tefillah and the Kabbalah's old mitzvos because he had passed everything with flying colors up until then, and at the end of it, Rav Karelitz just turned to him and said, hey, listen, you know, it's about to be Tisha B'Av. Maybe you want to, it might be hard for you to fast on Tisha B'Av. Maybe you want to wait until right after Tisha B'Av to complete the Gerus. And he said, no, for me, fasting's no issue. I'm fine with that. I'm looking forward to being Megayer. But I have a different issue, is that we say, Misha Nichnas Av Mam Atim B'Simcha, and we learn that you're not supposed to get married. But for me, there is a great simcha to become a Jew. And I'm wondering whether it's appropriate for me to go through Gerus and to complete this process during the 9 days. And with this, the story ends with Rabbi Karelitz crying. Second story is a story that is told about the Beis HaLevi when he was being wooed to become the Rav of Brisk, and he was entreated by a bunch of a bunch of leaders from Brisk, and he said, "Look, I mean, I've already had my stint in Slutsk. Here I am. I have an opportunity to learn and to teach, and this is probably the best thing for me. You know, maybe I should stay here." And he tried to gently reject the offer. And at that point in time, one of the leaders looked to him and say, pardon me, Kvod HaRav, 25,000 Jews are waiting for you in Brisk. And with that sort of response, the Beis HaLevi said, I'm going. He just got up and went. He said, if they're waiting for me, I will be there. The Chafetz Chaim adds to this story. He says, if Mashiach could hear Klal Yisrael saying, we're all waiting for you, perhaps it could have this very same effect. Another story about the Chafetz Chaim, he asked his Talmidim an interesting question. He said, what does man taste like if you don't have kavona? We know that if I want it to be a steak, it'll be a steak. If I want it to be cotton candy, it'll be cotton candy. If I want it to be a salad, it would be a salad. But what if I just wasn't thinking about it? What would it taste like? And he said, I know what it would taste like. It would taste like nothing. And he says, you know what? The same thing's going to be at Bias HaGoel. It's when Mashiach comes, the people who waited for Mashiach and were thoughtful about it, they're going to taste the sweetness. But the truth is, the people who didn't really wait, it may just feel like it's passing them by. Story about Rav Yecheskel Abramsky. The KGB unceremoniously found him and apprehended him in the middle of being Dana Din Torah. And they took him out into the Russian winter without even having a chance to put on a coat. And they threw him in Siberia and they took away all of his possessions and they didn't let him daven or do anything. And it was obviously a very, very painful thing for him. And he was thinking, well, what can I do? And this and that. He said, you know what? You can take everything away from me except for my emunah. And apparently the story is told that Rav Yosef Yitzchak of Lubavitch said that it was kedai for all of that Siberian prison to exist just for the purpose of this story, that couldn't take away somebody's emunah, and obviously that's relevant for all of us. One more hopeful story about, there was a particular survivor of the Holocaust who, I believe it was in Panovich, was crying during Kiddush Levana. Very, you know, very together person, but all of a sudden when Kiddush Levana came around, he was crying. And the question was, they finally turned to him and said, like, why are you bawling? What's the deal? And he said, I'll tell you why. He said, every time I get to Kiddush Levana and I see, it says, Shehim asirim lischadish kmosa. He says that there can be his conscious every month that in the deepest of the darkest times, there's going to begin a process to bring light. That's how Klal Yisrael can look at Galus. Even in the very, very darkest moment, there is tons and tons of hope. Last story is a story about Rav Gudel Eisner. And this is a story, apparently some Talmidim went with him from the Lodz ghetto all the way to Buchenwald. And it goes without saying that everybody at that time needed tons and tons of chizuk. And chizuk was hard to hold on to, especially in such dark moments. So one of them went up to him and said, "Pardon me, but like, how am I going to, where do I find hope? Where am I going to be able to, you know, to find my hope?" And Rav Gudel Eisner took out his Chavos Levavos that he took with him from the Lodz ghetto. And he brought it, opened it up to Shar Avodas Elokim, where he said, the Maisa of a particular chassid. He said, "Listen, you made me hungry. You left me without clothing in the dark. But I promise you, you know, if you, even if you burn me with fire, I will only add to my simcha and my ava for you, Ribono Shel Olam." So next, let's do a couple quick divrei Torah. The first one is Kedushas Levi. I'm not particularly particularly versed in the Kedushas Levi, but this one came across my desk, and since he was a relative, I feel obliged to share his Torah. So it says, we have in this week, Pasuk B'Shamayim of all of our arts mitachas. So it says, when we deal with Avodas Hashem, we should always be looking above us. B'Shamayim, for Inyonim of Ruchnias, we should always look at people above us to try to have proper kinas sofrim and to aspire to live by their examples. However, when it gets to, when it comes to physical things, when it comes to inyone haguf, he says, ala aretz mitachas. When it comes to physical things, we should always look to people who are, quote unquote, below us, people who have less than us, people need us more, the evyonim, the people who are poor and destitute and in need, and see how we can lift them up. Next, the Bam Ramban on Ve'asisa Esa Yosher Ve'asa Tov. I heard a story about a particular Rebbe who had one rule in his classroom, and the one rule that the Rebbe had in his classroom is act like a Ben Torah. Everything else was a corollary of act like a Ben Torah. And what was the chap? The chap was, I can't tell you, don't hit your friend in the head with a toothpick while he's, you know, while he's trying to learn, because that would be insane. You need to have an appreciation for the reyach of what I'm saying, and then be able to apply and run with it. Same thing here, says the Ramban. Says the Ramban, Torah couldn't and shouldn't mention every circumstance. Let me ask you a question. I'll even add, the couldn't is debatable, but I want to argue why it's a shouldn't. The reason why it's a shouldn't is that a Kadosh Baruch Hu wants people who are thinking about them, him. He wants people who are connecting to him. He wants ones who are trying to find ways to give nachas to a Kadosh Baruch Hu, as it says in the Mesilas Yesharim, that the definition of chasidus is Ashrei Adam She'amo B'Torah, a person who toils in the Torah in order la'asos nachas ruach liyotzro, in order to give nachas to Hashem. Meaning, all it has to be that a Kadosh Baruch Hu shows us a davar, a chatzi davar, and we will extrapolate, interpret, understand, as best of our ability and our resources ability, what the Kadosh Baruch Hu could want in a certain circumstance. Kadosh Baruch Hu couldn't talk about electronic intellectual property law at the moment that the Torah was given in specificity. That was not appropriate for the time, but he could teach us the din of Zen and of Zelo Chaser in the Gemara, so we could try to understand what the thrust of our halacha says and what the Ruach HaTorah would say. Let's now move to a little bit of an analysis of Rashi. In the context of the Jews camping in the valley of Baal Peor, Rashi quotes a Sifri, says the Jewish people are told that if they listen to the laws, the sin of Baal Peor will be forgiven, as opposed to Moshe Rabbeinu, who is not forgiven and is not permitted to enter into the land of Eretz Yisrael. However, several psukim later, we learn that everybody who followed Baal Peor was destroyed by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So if all the participants in Baal Peor were destroyed, then who would be left to be forgiven? So the first approach is that the survivors did not participate in Baal Peor, but were still needed kapara for an ancillary reason. So that Seyd al-Aderech says that all the people who participated in Baal Peor had perished and been punished, but the remainder of the Jewish people deserved some punishment based on the concept of arvus, collective responsibility, since they did not prevent the Baal Peor incident from taking place. This group could have gotten kapara if they just followed, they can if they follow the laws. Approach number two is that the survivors did participate in Baal Peor, but they had an excuse that would render them not liable or culpable for immediate punishment. So the Taz says that there were two groups of individuals who worshiped Baal Peor. The first group was the group that was genuinely interested in the idolatrous worship of Baal Peor and this crazy cult. This group was completely eradicated, and there was no kapara. But the second group was these individuals who really were interested in the Nishay Midyan. Once they were intoxicated by their interest in these women, they ended up getting involved in Baal Peor, but that wasn't really the ikar for them. The second group was given the option to get kapara if they would follow the laws of the Torah. In this vein, the Das Yisachar says that the incident with Baal Peor, in that incident, only some of the participants were sufficiently warned with Edim in order to be put to death. As a matter of procedure, only such people would die right after the incident. But many of the participants in Baal Peor didn't have the Edus and Hasra. So because of this, this group would be able to survive if they followed the Torah. Now on to a thinking question on this. To the extent that those who did not actually participate in Baal Peor were liable to be punished, for nonetheless, Moshe didn't get excluded. Why should that be? Take a look at Drashos Aran, Tes Zion. And one other thought question as well is that we see that Moshe Rabbeinu, right at the beginning of the Parsha, is waiting for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Lefi Rashi, to answer whether or not he's going to answer the Tefillos or not. And the question is, we see in the Mishnah by Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa that he says, Im Shogar Tefilasi Bepi, if my Tefillah is Masudr, then I should be able to know that it will be answered. But if it's not Masudr, then it won't be answered. So why did Moshe Rabbeinu not have that ability here and instead relied on asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Thank you for learning with me. Have a wonderful Shabbos.